BIA's Fiona Powell had a chance to sit down with Gerardo Edelstein, music director of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, to talk about what's next.
The new season for the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra begins on Tuesday, October the 15th, with a concert featuring the great Austro-German composers Wagner, Richard Strauss, and Mozart, and with guest soloist Julia Walcott, who will be featured in Richard Strauss's selections of songs for soprano. Maestro Gerardo Edelstein recently came into the VYA studio in Williamsport to talk about the new season and his first concert.
I'm very passionate about music and about what I do, and I love people. I love music, I love people, I love to work with people. And I feel that here in Williamsport, I found, you know, the perfect orchestra, the perfect environment, the perfect audience. And I feel extremely comfortable and also fortunate to be in this position.
What are you calling this season? You usually have an overarching theme for a season. Have you done it again this year?
Yes. I thought about one thing that it's a little bit unusual. It's called musical quotes. We know all these composers. We know them as musicians. And as composers, and we hear their music. But we know very little about their personalities or about what they thought about life, about music, about artistry, about politics sometimes. And there are so many wonderful, wonderful quotes from these musicians in their biographies, in their letters, in that I found it really, really interesting to explore a little bit more. So throughout the season, we'll read, some will show in the program, and I will mention a few, some of their most important or most characteristic or most interesting quotes in the lives of these great composers. So then we will get to know them a little better as people, and not just as composers.
That gives us an opportunity to understand their music better.
Exactly. I think that, as I said, people know very little how perhaps Mozart, how mischievous he was, or how much he loved, his sister, or how much financial trouble he was in always. And that brings me to one of the greatest symphonies that we are going to perform during the first concert is the Symphony No. 41 in C major, called sometimes Jupiter.
Now, did he call it Jupiter or was it called Jupiter?
This is very interesting because back then, the same way that happens today, it was hard to sell tickets or to bring people to the concert hall or to sell a new piece of music. So then the publishers will always come up with these ideas according to the type of music that was premiered. They will attach certain names to attract people even more. Like, you know, the Sonata Pathetique by Beethoven or his Pastoral Symphony, and now the Jupiter Symphony by Mozart.
Was something going on in the world that made Jupiter exciting to people?
No, I think that the idea of the Jupiter as a god, you know, the king of the gods in the Roman mythology, you know, it is a time that, especially in the opera world, composers were interested in the mythology and the history or the old, very old tales, and just by bringing them would attract people more to come and listen to those pieces. The only thing that makes me think about this is the grandiosity of the piece, is the perfection. That's the other point, because when we're talking about God, the king of the gods, would be perfect, and in a way, we want to think that Mozart as the perfect composer and Symphony No. 41 as the perfect symphony. And I have to tell you, Fiona, that I think we are pretty close to that, in my opinion. Mozart wrote 41 symphonies. The first symphony, he started when probably he was about 8 or 9 years old. It is believed that it was written mostly by his father, Leopold Mozart, who was a great musician. But one interesting thing that I always mention as I perform this 41st symphony, is that the theme of the last movement, the famous C, D, F, E, C, D, F, E, that motivical idea shows up already in his Symphony No. 1, in the horn part in the second movement. People would think, well, that may have been an accident. And I said, no way. It's all related Mozart used that motivical idea in other pieces, even in a different symphony, somewhere in the middle. Haydn used that motif earlier in his symphonies. So it has something to do with that motivical idea that attracted Mozart since a very early age. Could have been his father's influence as well, or could have been Mozart listening to some Haydn music. But what he does with that idea, motivical idea, in his last symphony is one of the best I've ever seen, ever heard. He takes it to a new place. Not only develops that musical idea as he wishes and beautifully and develops that idea throughout the last movement, but also adds four other themes in that last movement. Separately, he presents them separately at the very beginning of the movement, and then he puts them all together at the very end in a combination that it's glorious. I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes you will think, you know, with certain food, how can you eat, let's say, chocolate with red meat or something like that? How can you combine things of that sort? You know, they will probably taste horrible when they're totally antagonists. These are five themes that are not similar at all. But the way he combines them at the end, everything makes sense. And I don't think that there are too many pieces of that genius, of that compositional perfection. And that's what I really, really admire from Mozart.
So you're going to begin the concert with perfection. Where do you go from that?
That will be at the end. That's why I reserved it for the end, you know. One more thing that I would like to mention is this symphony, along with number 40, the famous one in G minor, and number 39, these three symphonies that he wrote in 1788 were the only ones who were not written for a purpose, as a commission. Mozart, it is known that he only will compose when somebody will come and say, hey, I want a piece for this occasion, for this event, a king or a queen or somebody.
Is it
with
because
money?
He was mostly flat broke most of the time?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what probably happened. He was totally broke and he said, well, I need to do something. I'm going to write three symphonies and I will try to sell them, whoever would like to perform or basically buy them. And until today, Fiona, we do not know if they ever were performed in a concert. Musicologists, they keep trying to find, it cannot be. These three masterworks, they must have been performed even at a small space or somewhere. So still there is no 100% confirmation that happened. So it could be that the guy, you know, was unsuccessful trying to sell these three masterworks. It does not surprise me because, as you know also, he died very poor. Just only a few people were at his funeral, and it was very sad, his last couple of years.
Do you think it's always difficult to recognize genius in the day?
Possibly. You know, there is this whole movie about Mozart and Salieri. People will probably know about this story. Salieri being very successful during his lifetime. He, you know, had jobs and was a very wealthy composer that everybody respected. On the other hand, Mozart struggled his entire life, and we know that his operas were very avant-garde with these very tricky themes, and Don Giovanni, The Marriage of Figaro, and Così fan tutte, with all tricky subjects. Lorenzo da Ponte, as the librettist, also a very controversial personality. So one dies poor and forgotten. And Salieri, until I would say late 19th century, was considered one of the most important composers of the classical period. And when we compare the two, the music that they wrote, there is no question that Mozart surpassed him by far.
When did Mozart become acclaimed?
I have to say probably in the 20th century for sure. In the 19th century, musicians respected him a lot. Like, you know, Beethoven, of course, was influenced by the music of Mozart and Haydn. Brahms loved Mozart. Tchaikovsky adored Mozart. Tchaikovsky was a tough cookie, because he would not like anybody. You know, he would always criticize every musician, every composer during his lifetime. But he had a special thing with Mozart. He wrote actually a suite. This orchestral suite number 4 is based on Mozart themes. That's actually called Mozartiana. So Definitely there was a respect and an admiration for Mozart, but I would say that only in the 20th century is when he started becoming, you know, the star that is definitely today, you know, and will last for centuries, I'm sure.
Now, you're going to have the 41st symphony, the Jupiter last. What are you going to open the concert with?
Very contrasting music, very contrasting composers here from Mozart. Still following the Austro-German tradition, because they are all either from Austria or from Germany. Two composers that are close to each other in a way, Wagner and Strauss. So we are opening the program with an overture by Richard Wagner. This is his 8th opera, Tannhäuser. And although people may think, wow, you know, he already had, you know, 8 operas in his pocket. This is an opera written in 1845. Although it went through several revisions, there are 2 versions, one from Dresden, one from Paris. It was an opera that was not that successful during that time. They thought it was too long. One interesting thing, the Parisians, they loved, the opera tradition was to include always a ballet in the opera. And Tannhäuser did not have one ballet, so then Wagner wrote music just to be used as a ballet music. Even though he added that, people in Paris did not like it as much. It took several years until Tannhäuser became the regular opera performed in the major opera houses. Part of it could be the theme. You know, the theme, it's also a little controversial. It's about the singer who falls in love with Venus. Of course, Wagner using 13th century mythological characters and themes. And this singer that falls in love with Venus decides eventually, after spending a year with Venus, decides to come back to Earth and seek for his true love, Queen Elizabeth. And she's waiting for him, And they have a contest, a musical contest. And apparently he's still under the spell with Venus. And the song that he sings is all about Venus.
I think a lot of ladies have been there.
Right.
Go away for a year. Yes. You come back, you say you love me, and then you sing about the other woman.
Yeah, so then the singer is sent for a pilgrimage to Rome to repent in front of the Pope, and the Pope says no. In the meantime, Elizabeth dies, you know, just waiting for this guy, and when he realizes that she dies, he kills himself, like, you know, in many operas in the 19th century. So drama. A dramatic opera, like many of these operas. The overture that we are performing, that's very common. The composer writes most of the main themes in the opera. They put them all together in an overture just to set the tone for the whole opera. These are beautiful themes. We will hear a little bit of each character in this overture. We'll hear Venus, we'll hear Elizabeth, Tannhäuser, the song that he sings to her. It is the perfect piece to start a program. Mainly for the brass players, they love it because it's full of brass and we have a fantastic brass section in the orchestra. So I'm sure they cannot wait to start the program and perform this beautiful music for this concert. Just to say one more thing about Wagner, I've been in Bayreuth, his home, basically. I don't know if you, Fiona, know, or the audience may know, that Wagner designed his own theater in Bayreuth. He was so specific, he needed to have control of everything, the music, the acting, the sets, and even the theater. So he himself gave direction to the architects and the engineers, all the people who put together this beautiful theater. I've been there maybe 10 years ago. And it's a gorgeous theater. They still preserve the original seats, wooden seats. So if you have to sit there for 5 hours for one of his operas, better be prepared or just bring a cushion, because they still have the original wooden seats and they don't want to change it because of the acoustics. Because they said if we remove those, the acoustic will change. And one very interesting thing in the theater is that no matter where you sit in the hall, you can see everything. You can see the stage perfectly, no matter where you sit. You know, in the balcony, in the orchestra, in the sides, whatever you see, you have a perfect view of the stage. The other thing that it was very important for him, not to get distracted by the pit, the musicians, or the conductor. So the pit is covered, so you do not see the musicians playing. You see a little bit of the head of the conductor, because he needs to be in touch with the singers. But you don't see the orchestra. It's very interesting. All your concentration goes into the acting, the staging, and everything that happens on stage. So That was Wagner. Moving on to the next pieces. I couldn't do a program, you know, that has Austro-German tradition and two great composers of opera like Mozart and Wagner without Strauss. You know, if you have to follow Wagner with something, you know, Strauss will be the first person that will come to my mind in terms of music, because Strauss wrote also 15 operas, one better than the other. He wrote 10 tone poems, orchestral tone poems, you know, fantastic, you know, Don Juan, Till Eulenspiegel, Ein Heldenleben, Don Quixote. I mean, just incredible, fantastic music, and all pretty much programmatic with a theme, with a story. As a young composer, because these compositions are from the late 1800s, are songs that he originally wrote for piano and voice, and later were orchestrated. Those are amazing. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful songs that will leave people asking for more, I can tell you. You know, the melodies are gorgeous, the harmony is so lush, so transparent, so rich, so warm, that the first time I heard them, I fell in love. And they're not always belong to a set of songs, like his famous four last songs. These are separate songs. Some on the same set, but some, you know, they come individual from different poets, actually. And this, you will like this, because one of the poets, I'm going to read you at least one translation of one of the songs, is by a Scottish poet. His name is John Henry Mackay. He's a poet that was born in Scotland, but was raised in Germany, and I guess Strauss loved his writings. And let me read you one, because this is one of my favorites. It's called Tomorrow. Tomorrow's sun will rise in glory beaming, and in the pathway that my foot shall wander, will meet, forget the earth, and lost in dreaming. Let heaven unite a love that earth no more shall sunder, and towards that shore, its billows softly flowing, our hands entwined, our footsteps slowly wending. Gaze in each other's eye, in love's soft splendor glowing, mute with tears of joy and bliss near ending. So beautiful, so beautiful.
So very romantic.
It's very romantic. All his songs here are about love, life, and death, of course, but one better than the other. And as a soloist, we have Julia Wolcott, soprano. I got the chance to meet with her while she was at school at Penn State doing her master's in voice performance. And I already was taken by her talent, her voice, her artistry back then. We sang together, we played together, also Strauss. She did with a trio from the Rosenkavalier, also fantastic opera by Richard Strauss. And I told myself, after doing that with her, this singer will make a huge career. You know, I really believe she's going to be a big star in a few years. And she's on that route. Immediately after graduating from Penn State, she went to Juilliard, and now she's singing all over the country in different opera productions and recitals and also some international engagements. And she's the perfect voice for this type of music. Because also, as you know, not all female voices are the same, of course. I mean, there's many, many different colors in for each composer or each piece, actually, you will have different types of sopranos. And she has the type of lyrical soprano that is perfect for this music, a very warm voice, very transparent, very clear, and just beautiful. Yeah, just beautiful. So I'm sure people will be delighted to hear her sing.
Gerardo Edelstein, music director of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, speaking about guest soloist Julia Wolcott, who will be featured in the first concert of the new season for the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra in Richard Strauss's selection of songs for soprano. Also on the program, the Tannhäuser Overture of Richard Wagner and Mozart's Symphony No. 41, Jupiter. The concert will be held on Tuesday, October the 15th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Arts Centre in Williamsport. For tickets, you may call the Community Arts Centre box office at 570-326-2424 or go online to caclive.com. Many thanks to Gerardo Edelstein.
And to you, Fiona Powell.